Penguin Random House Audio presents Station Eternity by Myrrh Lafferty. Read for you by Sarah Muller Christensen. To Douglas Adams, who will never know the impression he made on so many writers, and Alastair Stewart, who is the world's best electric monk. Part 1. All in your head. It's an art you partake in, and just know you all paid to watch. Let's start the show. Come out. Sit your ass down. Don't blink. Don't make a sound. Just look. It's okay to cry. You live your best life when you watch them die. The Show by Clipping. 1. Was Sherlock lonely, too? Nobody ever believed murders just happened around Mallory Viridian. Not at first, anyway. Before 2032, she figured she was an unlucky kid in that she'd been adjacent to two deaths at separate times. In college, she witnessed 4 murders, unrelated, and this time helped solve them. She began to worry after she solved her 3rd and 4th cases, 2 unrelated murders while on a college trip. She wasn't trained in crime scene investigation, and she wasn't even a big fan of mystery novels. Still, she was the only one to spot that the key clue to the murder of a room service waiter was not the shotgun, but a tacky, wet popsicle stick. Despite this solve, the detectives were not impressed.
I would have found it eventually,
Detective Kelly Brady had barked, his cheeks still pink from being teased by a beat cop about the popsicle stick. Even the investigators who accepted her help in solving cases didn't believe Mallory had done this before. She was 22, a college dropout, and a civilian. What did she know about a murder investigation? After she'd solved 5 cases, the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation started getting interested in her. Mallory knew what to expect when she pounded on Adrian Casserly Berry's door at 5 in the morning local station time. He would crack the door, eyes slitted in suspicion. He would see her and relax, and the air of suspicion would ease, and annoyance would take over. And if he didn't come to the door or told her what she didn't want to hear, she would have to figure things out on her own. I could always run. The thought was always at the back of her mind. But he would see her, she knew. Adrian tolerated her because she was the only other human he knew of aboard the space station Eternity, and even ambassadors got lonely. Even if he was missing only the superior feeling he got when he pulled ambassador rank on a civilian. He was important and had a job aboard the station, while Mallory was pretty much a leech on society, or a hobo, at best. He had political power. She had nothing more than sanctuary. Mallory had found that she could easily placate people like that by not threatening their power directly and reminding them constantly of their titles. Ambassador Casserly Berry, she called. Then she pounded again. She normally didn't ambush him early in the morning, but she'd been up to use the restroom and casually glanced at the news. After she'd translated the symbols, she ran down the station hallways in her pajamas to pound on his door. But the ambushing might work in her favor, she reasoned, since she usually could startle an honest answer out of him when he let his important ambassador mask slip. He was taking a while. She wondered if he was coming out of a drunken sleep or wanted to get dressed before he answered the door. She guessed the former. Few people stopped to get presentable when woken up early by insistent pounding. It turned out it was both. The door finally slid open about 4 inches, and a bloodshot eye peered out. Mallory could smell vodka on his breath and took a cautious step backward. Adrian's eyes were thin with suspicion and barely concealed hostility. He saw her, relaxed, and then looked merely annoyed. But when he opened the door to her, not only was his hair combed, but he was wearing a dress shirt and blue trousers. A loose tie hung around his neck. Even hungover, he looked almost presentable, while she was still in the t-shirt and pajama bottoms she had slept in. "Why are you dressed this early like you have a trust fund meeting?" she asked, baffled.
"Hedge fund," he corrected automatically.
He sniffed.
"I have an early meeting with station officials." "What do you want, Mallory?"
She looked past him, trying to focus. She hated that he had been the one to throw her off, using nothing more than a tie and a comb. Still, judging by his looks, his hangover was a big one, and she could use that to her advantage.
"I figured you'd be in meetings all day, so I wanted to catch you beforehand," she said.
She took a deep breath and relaxed her shoulders.
"I have some human-related business. Can I come in, please?"
He didn't step aside.
"What human-related business do you have that I don't already know about?"
"Let me in, and I'll tell you," she said. He sighed and stepped aside. The door opened all the way, and she stepped inside his quarters. The door slid closed behind her. "God, it smells like my grandmother's freezer in here," she said, looking around his quarters. "Were you having a party of one?" While stinking of vodka, his room still appeared neat and efficient, and larger than hers. The bed was made, the closet closed, the desk free of books or papers, the laptop turned off. Even the vodka bottles were arranged neatly, 3 full bottles on the right side of this small kitchenette sink, 3 empties on the left.
"Ms. Viridian, what do you want?"
he asked stiffly.
"I need to keep getting ready for my meeting. I like to look presentable before I leave my quarters. It shows people I respect them."
He straightened his tie and cast a pointed look at her clothes. She rolled her eyes.
"Whatever. We need to talk. Can I sit?" "No. Say what you need to, and then go."
He gestured toward the door and manually slid it open. She flopped onto his one easy chair, trying to force a casual position.
"When were you going to tell me about the humans?"
He paused for a moment and then closed the door again.
"What other humans beyond you and me are you talking about?"
"Adrian, I found out about the shuttle," she snapped. "The shuttle full of vacationing humans on its way to the station, who's apparently now just letting anyone on. Don't act like you don't know."
His face, already pale, grew white, emphasizing the small mole on his cheek.
"Tell me everything you know."
"What, that Eternity is changing its position on allowing humans as a species to come aboard? That we won't be the only people here very shortly? Tourists, diplomats, business people, even the military."
She took a deep breath and forced herself to lower her voice.
"How could you not tell me?"
He rubbed his face with both hands.
"I don't know anything about this. How did you find out?"
"Are you kidding me? You're supposed to be negotiating for Earth tourism, and it's happening without you doing anything? What the hell have you been doing, if not that?"
"How did you know?"
he yelled.
"Why did they tell you and not me?"
She sat up straighter and held her hands out.
"Whoa, hold on, it's okay.
Sheesh.
Are they really keeping you in the dark?"
He nodded.
"Okay. I've been trying to learn the station layout, iconography, and basic universal symbols on top of the laws so I don't accidentally get arrested. Again. Anyway, the early news this morning said a human shuttle would be here shortly. I thought you would get a daily news briefing as part of your ambassadorial breakfast or whatever your routine is."
He stiffened.
"I do. An ambassador's report is read to me every morning."
"It's read to you? You don't read it yourself?"
His pale face flushed, 2 red spots appearing on his cheeks.
"The station host reads it to me," he said.
"So you meet with Ren, and he tells you what he wants you to hear."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?